And with that, we are going to invite civil society representatives to discuss what's just been presented. And I welcome Lena Aag from Kvinna till Kvinna and Robert Hård, the Executive Director of Civil Rights Defenders. And Lena Aag is the Secretary General of Kvinna till Kvinna, which is directly translated as Woman to Woman. And that's an organization that strengthened the organization of women in conflict regions by collaborating with women's organizations and supporting their work to promote women's rights and peace. And Kvinna till Kvinna supports more than 130 women organizations in 5 regions afflicted by conflict. And Robert Hård, as I said, Executive Director of Civil Rights Defender, is one of the persons who was instrumental in developing the predecessor of the Helsinki Committee. And Civil Rights Defenders is an independent expert organization with the aim of defending human rights. You focus particularly on civil and political rights, and of course, supporting and empowering human rights defenders at risk. And civil rights defenders work in some of the world's most repressive regimes in collaboration with local forces to achieve long-term sustainable change. Your presentation. I was wondering, both of you work in quite repressive regions, and Richard touched a little bit upon sort of the limiting space for civil society to act upon. In your respective fields, you both work with human rights defenders, women's organizations, part of that. How do you recognize those? Do you recognize the description, or could you add on from your experiences? Lena, would you like to start?
Well, thank you very much, first of all, and thank you, Richard and Rachel, for interesting presentations. Kvinna till Kvinna has over 20 years of experience in working in conflict areas, with a presence on the ground, actually, which we have considered very, very important for exactly the reasons, Rachel, that you pointed out. So I think that, I mean, we met beforehand just to, you know, see whatever we were going to say. And interestingly enough, we had exactly the same reflection. So you will hear it from, you know, maybe cut in different ways here. But shrinking space for civil society is something that is just, you know, this is something that we recognize very, very well. It's deeply problematic what we see, the trends we see regarding shrinking space, because And it also has been problematic on a political level to actually talk about human rights today, you know, for politicians and governments too. I think the recent Saudi experience in Sweden just points to that effect. So the war on terror, I think, you know, has given patriarchal and non-democratic regimes an excuse to go after opposition and civil society, women human rights defenders, people who actually challenge societal norms. It gives them an excuse to terrorize them and so on. And at the same time, we see extremist groups doing the same thing. So now human rights defenders and women human rights defenders, we call them femme defenders, are squeezed from, you know, two sides. Apart from this, we see also a rise level of bureaucracy. You know, governments ask organizations to reorganize or to re-register. You know, it's putting pressure on them. It takes time from their work. Thank you, Robert. And etc. So one concrete example that one of our partners, they have to move around their concrete accounts. They have to have parallel accounts. One set of accounts for the police when the police comes, and the other, the real set of accounts, they have to move around between them because it cannot show that they get support, for instance, from us. Mm. So this is a real threat. And then I just wanted to say also, or I shouldn't take too much, Robert can also. We have more to say, I can
Of course,
tell you.
We'll have time. Robert, go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me, and thank you for an interesting report and discussion. I think that, I can only agree with what Lena is saying, of course, but I think that when looking at the problem, I don't think that it's so much about significant changes. It's more like significant changes in methods. That is also has to do with the working methods of civil society. And to some extent, I can't really recognize the work that we're doing as described in the report. I've been spending quite a long time now trying to figure out why I feel so distant from what is being described in the report. And I think that perhaps it could be that the organizations that we work with is normally, as Rachel was saying in I think her final sentence, is a long-term capacity building of human rights organizations, independent and rights-based organizations, which is very far from the protest movements that are mainly the target being described in the report. So I think that, and that is also what I see as the big contribution from Sweden and CEDA, who is doing an excellent job in the long-term capacity building of these organizations. And to be rhetorical, I would say that, well, perhaps the biggest threat against the civil society today is the rethinking of civil society from the outside. Because I think that the civil society, to a very large extent, is rethinking itself all the time. It's very good, according to my experience, that they are adapting to new circumstances, to the new threats and challenges that they face. But the problem is that they don't get enough peace to work and concentrate and focus on what they are doing. And I wrote a piece once which I called Bureaucracy Killed the Activist, and I took the description of what happened at Tiananmen Square in 89 when this famous picture of an activist standing in front of a
tank, yeah,
with two plastic bags in his hands and really stopping the military from attacking the demonstrants. A similar situation today would be, you know, this was a guy rushing home to his office, having no time at all to stop stop the tanks from going to the square, and carrying two bags full of receipts in order to satisfy the donors. Because that is pretty much what is happening right now, that the bureaucracy is taking too much time from the real human rights work and so forth. So that, I would say, is perhaps the most challenging, largest challenge for the civil society today.
Can I add also that the fluidity that you describe is something for femme defenders, women human rights defenders. You know, women's activism must always be highlighted. Men's activism is sort of taken for it's a given, it's taken for granted. So women need formal or networks and formal kind of organizations to back them up. They need platforms that are recognized and formalized to a certain extent, that because the violence that human rights defenders and women human rights defenders experience will otherwise be, it will not be politicized, if you see what I mean. It will be not be recognized as political violence. It will be just ordinary violence against women that happens every day. So it's this is very important for them to have this kind of sort of platform. Just wanted to
But does that mean you agree that you don't really recognize the within your field of work these social movements, protests movements that's described within women organizations?
No. Robert, you know, Robert's point about being long term and sustainable, etc., is extremely important in this regard. However, we also know, for instance, in Egypt, there they before had a vibrant civil society supported by the outside before the revolutions and the uprisings took place. Now we see it completely, and that was because it had been for a long time also sustained both from within and from outside. Mm. Today we have a completely new situation in Egypt.
Mm. And especially, I mean, talking about mass movements, it's very far from the reality that we are seeing every day. I mean, for a rights-based organization working with human rights or LGBT issues or with ethnic minorities, etc., you know, they are, you know, really a limited number of people working with these difficult issues, facing threats, violence from ordinary citizens, because they have a huge propaganda apparatus against them. They have traditional values, which is becoming more and more present in many societies. And added to that, the regime's increased control, both from a digital perspective, but also in when it comes to legislation, etc. So it's really it's something that we need to take into account. That the long-term capacity building is really what is needed in order to have a change in a longer perspective. And I think that both Kvinna till Kvinna and Civil Rights Defenders is really what we are doing is really to create an environment which will be there when the international community has left, a vibrant civil society that could actually act as the fifth actor of state in the state to make sure that, you know, all this, which is being described in the report as sort of the liberal view of traditional organizations.
Can I also say that I think in one respect, I mean, we have civil society is adjusting, as you said, Robert, all the time. It's now time for governments to adjust to, you know, this reality. And I think that's Richard's point, right, you know, that you have to adjust to this. And I think that, you know, from our part, you know, I mean, new public management is not the answer to this new situation or whatever we want to see, or to kind of be flexible, because I think that is the challenge today for governments and CEDA as well, to be, you know, flexible enough to be able to handle, you know, this kind of this more threatening situation that we see. And I think that, you know, I admire, Robert, your work on...
Yeah. Okay. Hugs left for later.
But
in that regard, then I have to. Yeah.
You know, we need space for innovation.
Mm, sure. But don't. I think that's clear, and we'll let, you know, government respond afterwards. But as you are, would be that immediate organization that I think Rachel mentioned. You have the power to, or the opportunity to select partners in countries, and hence you also need that's quite a strong or heavy responsibility that you have, that would also create or need a lot of competence and knowledge from very specific context knowledge. Do you think Swedish civil society in that sense take that responsibility serious, also in terms of following trends and context in order to choose partners that are...
You're asking us if we're taking the trend serious?
Yeah.
Well, I think the advantages, I mean, if you look at Civil Rights Defenders, being a human rights organization ourselves, of course it helps when working with other human rights organizations. We know the problems that they face. We have field presence, which is absolutely fundamental. But also, I think that what Lena was saying about the flexibility, which is, I think, is one of the great advantages of the report, pointing out the need for flexibility and also a possibility to take risks. But with the differences being put forward in Swedish international development aid, is really contrary to that, because you know, we are living from we only have our costs covered, but we are supposed to take the risk. We are having a time management system which is really making sure that every single hour that we are working is being directed towards specific projects, and we have no space whatsoever to you know, to be flexible or use different approaches if we are not then going to take the risk of ending up with costs that we don't have a possibility to cover ourselves. So it's really about changing, rethinking the support to the civil society in all ends, but it's not about rethinking civil society.
Of course. And Richard's report tried to he tries to differ between what he calls the Republican view of civil society, meaning more of creating a trustful, I'm looking at you so I'm not saying anything wrong, trustful relationship between civil society and state and parties, and the liberal notion more of that accountability, or holding government account, and more of a linear conflict, perhaps. In your field of work, I would imagine that the latter is also, from my perspective, perhaps what we look for is, you know, holding government account a little bit, and that social seems to be something that we move away from. This is my interpretation of Swedish civil society, the way we view it. What do you think? And could you see that? Are you working with both these kind of different movements, or in your field of work, do you recognize any being more present in the way we work?
Well, I mean, you know, when it comes to at home here in Sweden, definitely, I mean, we work together with government and SIDA and so on. But, I mean, no, I would not say that you know, working together, I mean, the state is very often a threat to our partners. And so to talk about transparency and making relationships with the states in this case is not happening really.
I think that there's an obvious need for diversity within the civil society, but from our perspective, as Lena was saying, I mean, we come from and work in an environment where the contact with the state is normally not very positive, and I'm talking about the our international work, and I think that what happens quite often is that we feel that governments and donors push for an increased cooperation between civil society actors and human rights defenders and with the different states that they work with, which is really risking their integrity and really have no connection to reality whatsoever, because that they are really there to be the what Richard would label them as a sort of the liberal part of the civil society, watchdogs, if you like. But so I think that there are actors for doing exactly that, the more republican part of it. But when talking about human rights defenders or similar, then you need to recognize that they have different roles. And I think also what is one of the great advantages of the report is pointing at the different roles of civil society and also donor states such as Sweden. I think that working with, for instance, civil society organizations such as Kvinna till Kvinna and civil rights defenders and others is one thing. But the state, and they should do, you know, because we are part of the civil society, and I think that we know best of, you know, how to deal with the civil society, while the states have a different possibility to lobby on regimes when it comes to legislation, to our colleagues who are being put in prison and things like that. And we need that combination of roles. But I see a tendency of roles taking on, or donors taking on, a position where they see themselves as part of the civil society, and I'm sorry, but that's not the case, and that doesn't mean that we are, you know, on different sides, but we have different roles and different responsibilities, and we need to acknowledge that.
So I think one recommendation from us is that there should be a more obvious link to the you know, to political action and diplomatic dialogue between the work we do and the work that, you know, our governments do. And so
a link between foreign policy and
absolutely, and I think that maybe we can see an emergent trend of this in Sweden now.
We still have plenty of time. That's wonderful. But I'm wondering then, if we have time, it would be, could you give a, just to give also paint a more a concrete picture of that what your colleagues and partners face in their field of work. Could you give a very concrete example of shrinking space for your organizations?
Shrinking space both from the local environment and also from the sort of the donor's perspective.
I was thinking more from the local environment.
Yeah, right. I think that you need to look at them both. Because you have, on the one hand, you have what is going on in countries like Russia or similar, where you have legislation, you have administrative crackdowns on civil society, you have arrests, and things like that going on a daily basis, making their lives more difficult. On the other hand, you have increased demands from donors, including SIDA and other government agencies, which is not really compatible, thank you, Lena, with the realities that these human rights defenders face. Mm. And instead, they are increasing the burden on them by having, reporting on results, etc., or keeping receipts. I mean, I have examples of colleagues who've been running out in the woods, literally digging down banks of receipts in order to bring back to Sweden at the best occasion, and taking huge risk in doing that, which is it's completely absurd. And this we need to talk about that. But many times my experience is, I'm sure Lena has the same, when you confront about these issues, you always get the answer, well, we have to have control, you know that. And we know that, absolutely. I mean, we are having, on a daily, a monthly basis, audits in our office. We have reviews, we have consultants making evaluations of us, our partners, on, several times a year. And what people need is a peace of mind to focus on the work that they are doing instead of running around and showing good examples to different donors and involving in different discussions and things like that. I'm not saying that we should completely exclude that, but it's over the top as it is right now, I'm afraid.
Yes, I have to echo this because this is a reality, and we have examples from Iraq where we've now supported women's organizations for quite some years, and they are under tremendous, tremendous pressure. I mean, from various sides in this conflict, and we ask them for their receipts. I mean, we have problems for sure to get those receipts, but I mean, what is the situation there? Mm. We have to see that. And
speaking about legitimacy, I mean, when talking to our colleagues on the ground,
they are
focusing on their difficult situation. Yes. And we say, that's fine. But what about the receipts? Mm. There's a conflict, obvious conflict about the focus on our different roles and the work that we're doing.
I think that message is clearly put forward, the need for greater flexibility. And perhaps that's a good opportunity to welcome. Thank you so much, both Lena and Robert, for your comments.